We're going to go ahead and jump right in and get started. We have lots of material to cover. And as you can see, based on the title, we're looking at creative parenting, thinking out of the box. There are certainly fewer things more important and more challenging than successfully raising godly children. What wonderful blessings it is to have these little ones so fresh from God entrusted into our care. But I think we would all agree in this world we live in that we need all the help and encouragement we can get. There are many different aspects to parenting. We're going to focus this morning on things that I believe will help in nurturing and creating strong emotional bonds. You remember from Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, Paul says, "But nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord." What does the idea of nurturance conjure up to you in your mind when you talk about nurturing someone or something? Okay, feeding, caring, protecting. Actually, the word connotes the idea of cherishing. Literally, it's warming. If you can picture a close-knit family, that's the picture of my family with my two daughters and son-in-laws at my daughter's wedding 4 or 5 years ago. We've been blessed to have a real close family, and that's what we all want, isn't it? A family that's close-knit. If you can imagine a cold day and everybody kind of snuggles up together, cherishes each other, and in so doing, they keep warmth in the home. And that's the picture that God wants when we talk about the importance of nurturance. So, what I'm going to do is talk about some miscellaneous things that I believe are a little different, not normally talked about when we deal with this subject, that will help us greatly as we figure out how we can creatively raise godly children. For those of you that may be thinking, well, my kids are already grown, that's okay. The second most important emotional bond that a child has in their life is their grandparents. So a lot of these principles may work for you, grandparents or great-grandparents. So please don't turn this off. These are helpful comments for all of us. Furthermore, I believe it's important that we think in terms in a local church of kind of helping us all together raise each other's children in the Lord, right? I mean, we're all kind of raising God's kids. We all are faithful stewards. We all need to help each of us in our family units. During Roman times, names were particularly important. In fact, that's been true really until just recently, when in Western culture, most people have no clue what their name means or give it very much thought. Certainly in Bible times, God went to a lot of trouble to name people certain names and to tell them what that name meant and to talk about that as how it might affect their destiny or their purpose in life. The Latins had a term called nomen est omen, which means names are destiny. And I think that frequently that is exactly right in regards to people's names. How do we know that names are important to God? What just jumps out at you right off the top of your head? All right, go ahead, Rick. Okay. He wants his church to be named after himself and not his cousin John the Baptist. Is that what you're trying to say? Okay, John? Okay, I think that's Isaiah 62. That's exactly right. Ephesians 3 and verse 15, Paul said, "Everything in heaven and on earth has been fitly named." Go back to the beginning of creation. What is one of the very first things that God told Adam to do after he looked around in this garden paradise and he saw the animal kingdom? Did he want those animals to remain nameless? No, he said, "You're to have dominion over this. You're to take care of that garden. And I want you to stop and do what to those animals?"
Name every.
That's right, Maria. Adam was supposed to name the animals. And you know what? That must have been a fun day. I mean, just think of looking at all the great variety of animals out there and saying, "Well, what are we going to name this one? How about hippopotamus? Huh? Does that sound good to you?" I mean, that must have been a great day for Adam. But I think this shows us that God cares about names and how they might impact us. Parents have a very important responsibility to name their children and to give this some serious thought. Somebody told me they were all real disappointed. They found out that they were named after a soap opera character that was popular when the child was born. Didn't give them much of a destiny. It was on the news last week. This woman named her child Messiah, and a judge said, no, you can't do that because that's a title and it belongs only to Jesus, and that's going to make this child feel uncomfortable or whatever. And that probably will be overturned. I guess parents have the right to call their kids whatever kind of crazy names they want. I remember back in the year 2001 that somebody had just heard on the news about Osama bin Laden and named their son Osama. Really? What kind of a legacy is that? Name your son after a terrorist? What is wrong with these parents? Absolutely crazy. And so we as parents and perhaps even grandparents need to think about, what am I naming my children or my grandchildren? What kind of input might I have? And how is this going to impact their destiny for better or for worse? Think, for example, about Abram. That means exalted father. When God gave him the Abrahamic covenant and told him through his seed all the nations of the earth would be blessed and all that kind of stuff, he changed both the name of Abram and Sarai to what?
Abraham.
Excellent, Maria. Abraham and Sarai, which means you're going to be the exalted father of many nations. You're going to have a descendants like the sands of the seashore and the stars of the heavens. God thought the name was important enough that he actually changed it in connection with the covenant that was given to Abraham. There are seven births in the Bible that are announced in advance by angels. And in most of those instances, God says, you're going to have a special son for a special reason, and I want you to name it this. Does God care about names? Absolutely. You can't study the Old Testament, especially, without looking in the margin and seeing all these names mentioned, and then it tells you what the names mean. You know, Adam means man. Well, that's appropriate. First man was named man. Well, that makes sense. But Eve, what does Eve mean? The mother of all living. And that's especially appropriate given her unique place in history. There's a big to-do made about John. Remember all that in the text? You know, Zacharias and Elizabeth normally would name their only son Junior. Zacharias Junior. That would have been typical. Carry on the name of your only begotten son. And there's all this to-do made about this angel who appears to Zacharias and says, you're going to have a son, and you're going to name him what? You're going to name him John. Now, why is that so important? Anybody know what John means? John, you probably know what John means, don't you? Nope, it doesn't. You are a beloved one, but that's not what it means. It means grace. See, people don't know what their name means. That's why we need to talk about this today. Think about this for a minute. Why is it so significant that the one that is to prepare the way for the coming Messiah and for the coming kingdom, that his very name mean grace? What are they introducing for the first time? John 1 and verse 17, the law was brought by Moses, but grace and truth was brought by Jesus Christ. And so John is out preaching the message about getting ready for the kingdom, and his very name, he is a messenger of grace. How appropriate that is, and how significant as we look at God's purposes as he reveals them in his word. One of the things I'd like is this reference in the church in Philadelphia. Notice what it says in Revelation 3 and verse 12. He that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of God, which is in the New Jerusalem. I will write upon him my new name. Wow. Names are so important. If I understand this correctly, when we get to heaven, what is God going to do? He's going to give us all new, specially chosen names. That could be awesome. As a part of our new creation in the new heaven and the new earth. how important it is that we understand the importance of names. I've always been fascinated by this, almost as far back as I can remember. As a young teenager, I was asking about names and what they meant. And my wife and I were talking about, when we're going to have our children, what are we going to name our children if we have a son? One of my favorite Bible characters is Hezekiah. His name means Jehovah is my strength. And of course, nomen est nomen. Did that become his destiny? Did he, through his own personal trust and reliance on God and his prayer, turn back Sennacherib and the 185,000 soldiers that were there that were killed overnight by the angel that came? And because of Hezekiah's personal strength and trusting in God in that crisis? Wow, what a great Bible character. To this day, there are times where I need a little boost. I say to myself, Hezekiah, 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 Jehovah is my strength. My wife was scared to death if we had a son. I'd insist on naming him Hezekiah. She didn't want a son named Hezzy. Had a little marital discord over that one. But it didn't matter because we didn't wind up having a son. And she's probably right. Hezzy would not have been a very good name in the 21st century. But still, I like Hezekiah. And names are destiny. Timothy was my second choice. I mean, just think about that. Naming your son Timothy. And then the whole time your child is growing up, you say, you know why you were named Timothy? Because your name, very name, means devoted to God. And you're going to grow up to be devoted to God as a young man in this family that's devoted to the Lord. Do you think that have a positive impact on a child's spirituality? Absolutely. And how about Samuel? Samuel means answered prayer or ask of God. And he was, because he came as a result of Hannah's petition, who understood that it is God that opens and closes wombs. Isn't it a shame that in the West we've kind of lost this very important part of Semitic and biblical culture in regards to names and what they mean? It's so important. Parents need to use this, I am convinced, as a part of building self-esteem and purpose in children. I wound up having two daughters. My firstborn, we decided to call her Amy, because that means beloved. And we said, Amy, every time we call your name, we want you to remember how loved you are, both by God and by your parents and by so many people all around you. And we put together some things in her room that talks about Amy and the definition. And my wife cross-stitched pillows of all the family members and all the names and what they mean. And when you walk into our family room, there on the couch was all this conversation piece about the names and why we selected them. And I remember as a little kid, I'd say, now, Amy, what's your name mean? And she'd go, loved one. And I'd go, that's right, don't you forget it. See, I thought that was a very important positive thing in regards to her self-esteem. Here are my two daughters at a recent wedding. They're grown up now. It's hard to believe. It's amazing, you driving them home from the hospital, and the next minute you're walking them down the aisle. Boy, treasure those years while they're at home. It goes by quickly. Allison means honest one. And again, I wanted a child that had a good and honest heart. Isn't that what it's all about? Cultivating a good and honest heart in your children? And so I remember one time we caught Allison as a, 4 or 5-year-old saying something not true. Amy comes running in saying, Allison's spinning some tall tales. And I remember talking to Allison about it. And I said, now, Allison, what does your name mean? Honest one. That's right. Now, is that honest? Come on, this is out of character for you. You know, your very name means honest. You need to make that a very important part of who you are and your character. And she did. I remember hearing years ago, she was at the Florida College Academy there in Tampa, Florida, where we used to live. And something happened where some classmate accused Allison of cheating. And all her classmates rose up to defend Allison. And they went to the teacher and to the principal and said, no, Allison would never cheat. Her very name means honest one. Just ask her. And Allison goes, yeah. And she did. To this day, she's just unscrupulously concerned about honesty. And that was instilled in her from the time that she was a little girl. Sometimes, of course, you name a child after a Bible character, like David. We have several Davids here at Kirkland. David is Hebrew for Messiah's love. Well, that's certainly a meaningful name. But, you know, you probably want to talk to your child about, you know, David was a great leader and a giant killer and a man after God's own heart. And you talk about the characteristics or the traits of that character that you want them to emulate. Allison's middle name is Louise, named after my mother. And we would talk to Allison about, we named you after my mom in part because my mom is a godly elder's wife and hospitable and artistic and generous. We talk about all these wonderful traits of my mom and say, you know, you're her namesake for a reason. She'd listen, the wheels will turn. Listen, kids really are interested in their name and what it means. In fact, I brought with me a name book with 10,000 names in it and their definitions. I'm going to leave it up here on the pew today. And if you're not sure what your name means or the names of some of your loved ones, you go up there and you look it up. Because it really can make a significant difference. I had some fun time on the plane going over the directory with the name book and looking at the names at Kirkland. And I thought it would be fun for us to talk about this just for a minute. Jan Bader means God's gift. And of course, as far as I'm concerned, Jan lives up to her name, doesn't she? She's a gift to everybody she meets, and one of the primary reasons why I'm here standing before you this morning. And then you've got Diana Bannister, means divine, glorious one. Whoa, that's something to live up to, right? And what?
Diane, no, not Diana.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Well, that means the same. Diane or Diana, same root. I think in the directory it says Diana, but whatever. Any rate, you've been a blessing to Kirkland for all these 44 years, and what a glorious blessing, and what a neat thing to live up to. And then, of course, we have the Browns. Daryl means beloved, and Carrie means pure and right. Thought that was kind of a neat combo. And Daryl, I wonder, does Carrie ever remind you in an argument that her very name means she's right? I mean, I just wonder about that. You know, you hear about the guy who was looking for Miss Wright, and he found her, but he didn't know her first name would be Always. You know, but anyway, how about the Graddens? They're not here today, but I love to talk about Esther as the star of the Old Testament, because Esther is a Persian word for star. So she is. She's literally the star of the Old Testament. Well, who's the pearl of the Kirkland Church? Guess what? It's Margaret. Her very name means pearl. So when they come back, you'll have to let Margaret know how she's the pearl of our congregation. And then I thought this was kind of neat. I like this. Jesse Haverstock, God exists upright. And Cami, listen to this. Cami is a Japanese word that means divine aura. Wow. I mean, I knew when Cami walked into a room and smiled, it's like the whole room lights up. But I didn't know it was because of a divine aura. That's pretty neat. And she really blossoms when she's escorted by her upright husband, Jesse, right? But you know who else, you know, kind of has a smile like that? You just look over at her and you're just, what's that word? Tripperpated? Whatever. That's the word she likes to use. At any rate, Claire means brilliant, shining light. And certainly she is. And Kyle has to do with being perceptive and wise. And the most perceptive thing you ever did was propose to Claire, right? Ah, that's right. He says amen. How about John Morrow? John means grace. And how appropriate for a shepherd of the Lord's church to be named for grace. And his wife, Carmen, means voice like soft music, joyful. And it dawned on me this morning, you know, why'd the two of them fall in love? Well, John looked over at Carmen and she was singing his song, right? And how could she not say yes to his proposal? And I'm glad that Peter is back from Greece. And of course, Peter is a Greek name. That's appropriate, isn't it? For rock. How appropriate. And, of course, he's been dating Norma. And did you know, you watch this, if she hadn't told you, she'd probably keeping it from you. But you know that the word Norma, you know what that means? It means perfection.
She kept that from it, didn't know.
Yeah. The model of perfection. Whoa! Seems to me that this Greek rock and this Christian model make a pretty good couple. All right. How about the Timberlakes? Sean is servant and Laura is crowned with honor or victorious like a queen. And so she's the queen and she adores her servant husband. How about the Todds? I thought this was cute. Murray, did you know that your name means sailor? Yeah, it means discerning sailor. And so the discerning sailor looks over and he sees his vision of beauty, and the rest is history, right? And the Wagners, I thought this was appropriate. Benevolent leader, that's what Rick means. And boy, he is that kind of person if you get to know him. What a wonderful legacy for a shepherd. And his wife Donna is a refined lady, even when she's struggling with health issues. So you can kind of have some fun with these names, but I want you to realize how valuable it is. And I'd like to encourage the congregation to write out the names in the directory and let everybody know their spiritual meaning. I think it will help us to have some good conversation, and it will help us to get to know one another better. My name means rising above obstacles. I like that. And sometimes when I'm having difficulties, I remind myself, with God's help, I can rise above this obstacle. That's what my very name means. Do you know what your name means? It's never too late to benefit. And check out this name book, as I mentioned earlier. Take the names of the local congregation and publish its meanings. Tell children in Bible class the spiritual significance of their name. Can have lasting impacts upon them. Remember, a good name is more to be desired than great riches. This book in the foyer talks about the character building value in understanding a name's meaning. And I love this statement. It says, each name carries its own message, its own gift. Discover its heritage, significance, and spiritual application. So please, during the break, check out the name book. All right, let's look at a second kind of way to creatively parent and impact the children around us. One of the things that research has found very, very clearly is the importance of the family dinner hour. And let me begin this discussion this way. What does disfellowship involve? In 1 Corinthians 5, when it talks about disfellowshipping someone that is in sin, it says, with such a one do not what? Such a one, do not eat. Now, why are we not supposed to eat socially with someone who has been living in sin and we're attempting to try to prick their conscience and get them to repent? What's so significant about eating? Particularly in the ancient world, eating connoted fellowship and acceptance. In fact, I have an article with me here. It's called Eating Together Provides More Than Nourishment, and it talks about the fact that there's something about sharing a meal with someone that creates emotional bonds. When I was single, the times that I felt the most lonely was when I'd go back to my dorm room or my apartment and I'd eat a meal by myself. There's just something about that. I felt like, wow, I want to have somebody I can share my meals with. There was just something about that. And when you sit down with someone to eat, what do you almost always do? Hopefully you don't just sit there and eat. You talk, right? You get to know somebody. It's one of the reasons why hospitality is so important. And so one of the ways you can create emotional bonds is making sure that that family dinner hour is almost sacred. Make sure that you turn on that answering machine, that you don't just let everybody kind of, you know, fend for themselves and get TV dinners and use the microwave. Make sure you meet together and you sit and you talk and you spend that quality time together. In some families, the only time they're ever really together is when they sit around and have dinner together. Look at this report. I was just fascinated by this. This is not from a Christian source. This is just from marriage and family literature. It says, the more often a family eats dinner with his or her family, the less likely that child is to smoke, drink, or use drugs. Frequent family dining is correlated with doing well in school and developing healthy eating habits. That pattern holds true regardless of a child's gender, family structure, or socioeconomic level. Wow. Pretty important stuff. One of my fondest memories is waiting at 6 o'clock for my dad to come home from work. And we were all ready for him. And he'd come in and he'd say, hello, everybody. Hello, is everybody happy? And we'd say, yes. And he'd come down and he'd ask us what prayer request we had. And he'd lead us in prayer. And we'd sit around the dinner table and we'd eat. And I find myself quoting my father a lot. And much of it is things he taught me around the dinner table when we'd have devotions and discussions afterwards. It's amazing how those have gone into long-term memory. And we did the same thing when my kids were growing up. You just need to make that a very, very special time, the family dinner hour. Here's a study of National Merit Scholars. One survey of National Merit Scholars. Those are the people that are in the top 2% of the country academically. Now, I spent most of my life in academia, so I'm a firm believer in higher education, and I found this fascinating. It said they were looking for common denominators in their upbringing. You know what they found out? Almost without exception, the most outstanding teenagers grew up in homes where the whole family sat down and ate dinner together at night. And their earliest memories were their parents, or parent, could have been a single family home as well, talking to the children about the importance of learning and education and instilling the importance in them at a very early age. Again, you know, I'm a big believer in getting a good education, but you know what I'm even a bigger believer in? Instilling faith in God in our children and in feeling respect and honor for the Lord Jesus. And my earliest memories are not about my parents talking to me about to get a good job, you need to get a good education. My earliest memories have to do with mom and dad talking to me about God. You know, the Catholics have a saying. Give me a child until he's 7 and he'll be a Catholic the rest of his life. One Jesuit theologian said, give me a child until he's 7 and I don't really care who has him afterwards. Wow, what did they do the first 7 years? The question is, what are we doing the first 7 years? Are we taking seriously the opportunities to mold and instill faith in those children and to talk to them about spiritual things that will impact them for the rest of their life? Or are we just sort of babysitting and letting them sit mindlessly before the computer or the TV and wasting this wonderful opportunity to instill faith? I fear too often it's the latter and not the former. I cannot impress upon you enough the importance of doing things that will establish meaningful traditions and that will impact your children's values for the good. And one of the best ways you can do that is to have regular quality time around the dinner table. One of the things my wife and I did is we decided that around the family dinner hour, we would come up with family memory verses. Before we'd say our prayer, we would say either our family motto, which we'll talk about in a minute, or one of our family memory verses. And we kept them together on these 3x5 cards. You'll notice when my wife comes, she's got a big stack of 3x5 cards still and a rubber band that she keeps with her Bible. Those are her regular memory verses. And she'll read a verse or hear a verse, and she'll write that down, and she'll add it to her stack. It's a pretty lengthy stack. And when she waits in line or something, she'll not get frustrated or anxious. She has to wait. She'll take out her cards, and she'll review them, and she'll refresh them. And we tried to teach our kids to do that very same thing. It makes a huge difference. What verses did you hear this week that had an impact on you? Do you want to add them to our family memory verse list that we rotate periodically and review as a family? Remember, Psalm 119, verse 11. David said, thy word have I laid up in my heart that I may not sin against thee. We need to have our children treasure the word of God. And I also highly recommend what I call this Daily Bread Promise Box. I took this off our table because my extras are packed. But at any rate, the point is, somebody comes over to our house. Remember this, Nora? And first thing we do is we say, now we give you a spiritual appetizer. These are calorie-free. But we're a family that believes that man cannot live by bread alone, but instead by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. And it's a little tradition. Our guests come in and we give them this, and they read this. and then they put it back in the box for next time. These things only cost about $6. And it just thrills my soul to go into my kids' houses and kitchens and see they're maintaining this tradition. What a neat thing to do on a regular basis, to instill the right kind of faith in your children. And you grandparents, you can buy things like this and give it to your kids so that the kids and grandkids can have these kind of reminders and these kind of mementos for your family. Let me give you an example of how this works. One of our favorite memory verses is Isaiah 41 and verse 10. The reason why we like that so much is because when Allison was about 9 or 10, we had one of these afternoon thunderstorms in Tampa. Tampa is known as the thunder capital of North America. And it seems like the early evening you frequently have thunderstorms. And in our neighborhood, it frequently knocked the lights out, knocked the power out. So this is kind of a typical early evening. Allison's in the tub. The lights go out. It's thunder and lightning. And she's, of course, 10 years old, and she's a little scared. And so she starts crying out for mom. My office is right there. I don't know why she didn't cry out for dad. But anyway, she cries out for mom. So mom and dad both get up. And we had one of those houses where they had those little pins that you keep on the ledge above the door. And we're looking for the little pin to open up the lock. And the pin's gone for some reason. And Allison's getting a little anxious because she's in the dark there. She's saying, you know, mom, dad, you know, open up. So we're running around the house looking above the ledges trying to find a pin to open up the lock so Allison can, you know, they got a flashlight or something. And all of a sudden, Allison stopped fussing and got real quiet. And my wife was freaked out, like she was going to drown or something in there. I go, Gail, it's only a tub. But at any rate, we're having this discussion, and finally I went, shh, shh. And we listened at the door. And Allison is saying her family memory verse, one of them. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea. I will help thee, yea. I will uphold thee with thy right arm of righteousness. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed. She's saying it over and over again. Of course, we got the door open, and she said, you know, I was fine. I just remembered my family memory verse about needing to trust in God, and I was okay. You know, one of the neat things about having kids is sometimes they raise you. You know? I mean, you know, how many adults need to remember these Bible promises and lay them up in their hearts and use them in appropriate times as well in their life? And so whenever we're together as a family, we talk about that. We always remember Allison in the tub. Sometimes you can read an article out of the paper so we can help process the material and guide their thinking. Gail was especially good about looking for gems. One of the ones that stands out is this. I remember Amy learned this just in 10 or 15 minutes. Isn't it amazing how quickly kids can memorize? And so the verses I memorized as a kid, I still remember so well. It's easier to memorize when you're a child than when you're an adult. So lay these opportunities up before them. Watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your words, they become your actions. Watch your actions, they become your habits. Watch your habits, they become your character. And watch your character, it will become your destiny. And Amy would rattle that thing off. Years later, Amy's a teenager. She wants to go to a movie that has a whole lot of profanity and inappropriate stuff in it. She goes, oh, it's not going to affect me. It doesn't matter. I sort of smile. I said, Amy, watch your thoughts. They become your, and she knew the rest. See, she'd already laid up the principle, and she thought about it for a minute. She says, okay, that's really something I shouldn't go to, huh? I said, I don't think so. But see, the principles of this instilled in her heart early helped her to make right entertainment choices. You see why what you do the first 7 years is so critical? And I also decided at one point that I wanted to have a family motto or mission statement. And this is before Stephen Covey introduced them and they became so popular. But there's a reason why they're popular. You think about the families of the past, the coat of arms or the seal, and you were told as you left, you know, for example, in England, you know, go out on your journeys, but remember who you are and remember who you represent. And you weren't supposed to do anything to bring shame to your family name. We need to get back to that. We need to recognize as Christians that we wear the name of Christ and not bring shame to the name of Jesus Christ, it seems to me. But anyway, as I was thinking about this and looked up my past family seal from several hundred years ago that had long been forgotten in my family, I thought, well, you know, businesses understand the value of a motto. You know, GM used to talk about the mark of excellence. I guess now it stands for government motors. But you know what I mean. Hallmark cards, they cared enough to send the very best. You've got certain things associated with businesses for reasons. And I thought, well, what do I want to associate with my family? Why can't I do this for my own family? After all, what you will someday be, you are now becoming. So what the flag is to our country, this motto would be to our family. So I don't remember exactly. I think Amy was about 7 and Allison was 5. And I said, we're going to put together a family motto and I want your input and help. And they said, okay, Dad. Said, put together some adjectives of some things that describe what you think we ought to be. Not necessarily what we are, but something that we can, you know, as a vision, as a family, help kind of hold each other accountable to these principles. And so they said, okay, I remember they came up with these adjectives. And so remember, this is primarily from, you know, a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old in Brent and Gale. So we're not going to have a real complex family motto, but this is what we came up with. We are a loving, affectionate, responsible, obedient, cheerful, godly family. We always do our best to finish what we start. Mom and Dad added that last part. And before we start a meal, we'd say, let's say our family motto. We didn't do it every night, but probably 2 or 3 times a week. And Amy goes over to her next door neighbor's house to sleep. First thing she wants to know is before they have dinner together is, you guys going to say your family motto? And they go, our what? You don't have a family motto? No. So Amy comes back and says, how come other families don't have family mottos? I go, well, we try to make sure that our family is special. By the way, I would love for a part of our culture here for the families to spend some quality time coming up with their own unique family mottos. And you go into their homes and up on the refrigerator and up on the walls are these family mottos, and they all have spiritual connections, which can be very, very meaningful. And years ago, they were teenagers, and I said, do you want to update our family motto? And they said, absolutely not. But, you know, this really does work. You know, I remember I came in one day, and I was kind of down, and Amy walks up to me and says, Dad, we're a cheerful, godly family. Mm-hmm. I go, yeah, you're right, Amy. I understand. Amy was maybe not being particularly respectful, and I'd say, remember how we're supposed to be affectionate and responsible and obedient. Give Dad a hug. See, this did help us to become what we are now as a family. It's very simple, but it can have a huge impact. Let me give you some samples. Ralph Walker is a good friend of mine. I think he's been here in a meeting years ago. He and I are classmates, used to serve on the administration at FC together. And I sent him the article that I've printed out for you on mottos and creeds and how you can use them in family life. He said, Brent, I think you're on to something. This is what he came up with. We are the walkers. We walk in paths of righteousness. We are a family of loving, supportive people, and our goal is to help each other be our best. We focus on whatever is true, honorable, right, pure, lovely, and of good reputation. We strive for excellence in being worthy of praise. We are the walkers, and walker women don't wear brown. Ralph has 3 daughters, and apparently they don't think they look good in brown, so they put that in their family motto. I mean, that's okay. That's Ralph for you. And I like this. This is Kate Wilsford's family mission is to love, care, and support each other, make our home a refuge from the world, enjoy life and all its blessings, do for others, giving ourselves to God forever, and they all signed it. And then when those kids went to Florida College, they put that up on their wall. And Emily told me it helped her not to feel so homesick. All right, how about this? The Huber family motto. It's a real cute family with 3 boys, and they learned how to put this into a song, and they would sing it. These folks live in Missoula, Montana. We are the holy, humorous, happy, helpful, honest, heroic Hubers. I love that alliteration. Here's one. We are the Crafts family. These folks are from Athens, Alabama. We are a compassionate, cheerful, crazy, conscientious, come-on-over Christian family. We cherish the name and sacrifice of Christ, the truth of His holy word, and each other. And sometimes we're cat-loving, cinema-viewing, chicken-eating, chocolate-loving couch potatoes. Well, that's honest of them. Now, my question is, why not take some time and come up with a family motto, creator, mission statement of your own? I don't think it's ever too late to benefit from this tool of creative parenting. How about family traditions? This is our last thing I want to stress. Traditions are neutral. They can either be bad or good. The word just means handed down. But one of the things you'll find is that good traditions can become cherished memories which show forethought and concern. When I was a kid and I would walk home from school, whenever it was raining, my mom would fix me hot apple cider. And to this day, whenever I smell hot apple cider, I think about my mom and how she did that for me as a kid. And sometimes when I go to visit her and if it rains, she says, "You want some hot apple cider?" It's amazing how many of these traditions revolve around food. Isn't that interesting? Twofold purpose. They create anticipation and meaningful reflection, and they cement relationships that create lifelong bonds of closeness. So, for those of you that have families, what kind of traditions are you developing that go into long-term memory that they'll reflect back as an adult fondly that will help you to be close to each other? God has handed down many memorials and divine traditions. Obviously, the Passover meal, the Lord's Supper, where we look both backwards and forwards. Those are weekly traditions, right? In the case of the Passover, an annual tradition. So God knows what he's doing here. The question is, what are we doing as a church family, as an individual family, to create these special kind of memories? Well, just the idea of a family motto and family memory verses are cherished traditions in my family, and I would encourage you to consider making them traditions for you as well. Another thing I highly recommend is making a big deal out of spiritual birthdays. When someone is converted, you give them a new birth certificate. Nora, I still hope you have yours, right? My daughter Amy was baptized on September 9th. And Allison on 10/25. And I remember after they had been a Christian a year, we had a little celebration. I said, "Okay, you've been a Christian a year. How you feel like you're doing?" And to this day, I call them up, "Happy spiritual birthday." I send them a card. Well, we try to make as big a deal out of their spiritual birthday as we do the day they were born physically. Which of the two is more important? Which one has really more eternal consequences? Why we don't make a big deal out of our spiritual birthdays? I don't get it, but I think we should. I see no downside and much upside. So, when folks are converted here, we give them a little baptismal certificate, suitable for framing. They can be reminded of the day. As a dad, you know, get your kids a Bible and write in it and put the date that they became a Christian and make it a meaningful memory for them as you instill these important principles in them. And I like this You Are Special plate. You've probably seen this. You can get this at, I think, redplate.com. But we started using this when my kids were quite young. And that is, whenever they had some special achievement or whatever, we would pull out the You Are Special plate for them, and they get to eat on that if it happens to be their birthday, for example, or something. And I was amazed, even as a teenager, how much this meant to my daughter, Amy. We used to call Amy the three-point queen. She loved basketball, and she would stand at that three-point line and frequently be past the ball when they're 2 points behind, make the three-pointer, and win the game. You know, everybody was all excited on those days. I remember one game, Amy scored 21 points, best game ever. And she was so excited. She rushes in the car. First thing she says when she gets in the car, she's a junior in high school, "I know what plate I'm eating on tonight." I said, "Amy, anytime you have a game like that, we'll be more than happy to give you the You Are Special plate." And they've got a little pin where you can write on the back in silver or gold the memento, the occasion that caused you to use the You Are Special plate. These things take a little thought, but boy, can they ever be meaningful when you take the time to use them. All right? We would go for family walks frequently after dinner, and the neighborhood kids would join us. And again, what do you do when you walk? You talk. It's a great tradition. And you dads, I'd like to suggest, if you possibly can, that you make it your job to tuck your kids in at night and say prayers with them. I did this all the way up until the time my kids were like juniors in high school. I knew eventually they'd say, Dad, I don't need this anymore. But, you know, that was our time together. And we had great discussions when I'd say, what do you want to pray about tonight? It's a great time for me to be with my kids. Obviously, my wife was with them more because she was a full-time mom. So I wanted to treasure those special times as their dad. And I never did this, but I've had people tell me that one of their family traditions that I thought was really neat is what they call pillow prayers. And that is where, if you're having a challenge with your teen or whatever, you would write out your prayer for them and put it in an envelope underneath their pillow, and then they'd read it. This one particular mom said the teen was rebellious and had fallen away, and she wrote a bunch of pillow prayers for her teen. And after about 3 months later, he came back with all these pillow prayers and says, I'm not doing right, and he was restored. He remembered and saved all of those prayers she wrote out for him. I thought that was a neat thing. See why I call this creative parenting? Thinking out of the box? I have another book with me I'd like for you to look at. This is by Shirley Dobson, James Dobson's wife, and Gloria Gaither. It's called Let's Make a Memory. It's called Great Ideas for Building Family Togetherness. It says in this book, we have this moment to hold in our hand and to touch as it slips through our fingers like sand. Yesterday's gone, tomorrow may never come, but we have this moment today. So here's all these different ideas of things you can look at to establish meaningful traditions. And may God bless each of you as you creatively raise your children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Do I have any time for discussion, or that's it? Bell rang, so that's it. Okay, we have a tradition here. When the bell rings, the trapdoor comes, right? Okay, thank you very much. Enjoyed the class. Hope you did as well. And make sure you pick up the handouts that goes with today's material. There's a handout there that has a bunch of questions and helps you to process the information we went through. Thank you.